But let's open up our Bibles, 1 Samuel chapter 4. 1 Samuel chapter 4. If you want to follow this through on a church Bible, you will see them on the end of the row that you're sitting on. And page number, I've got a different Bible these days. So, page number is 274. So if you want to follow that, page 274 on the church Bible. And it's 1 Samuel chapter 4. I'm going to read through this chapter in short pieces as we progress through our ministry this morning. But I want you to start off right at the end of the chapter. So if you go to verse 21, it says, "She named the boy Ichabod, saying, 'The glory has departed from Israel.'" She named the boy Ichabod. Now, I am told by Hebrew scholars that the name to pronounce that, the way to pronounce that is very different from what I've said. But let's just keep it as Ichabod for the time being, shall we? Ichabod. What a name to give your baby. She named the boy Ichabod. Years ago, Johnny Cash had a song out called "A Boy Named Sue." And the song was all about a boy who had this name, Sue. His dad had given him that name. And this boy, who then grew up to be a man, he decided to go around the world trying to find his father and asking why he called him Sue. And also to get even with his father for calling him a boy named Sue. He got into trouble wherever he went with the name Sue for a boy. Fancy calling your baby Ichabod, though. Imagine looking into the pram. "Oh, that's a cute little baby boy. What's his name?" "Ichabod." "Really? Okay, nice name, I suppose. What will his friends call him when he grows up? Icky? Bod? Body?" What a strange name to give a baby. But there's a reason why this lady called her child Ichabod. And that is seen if you read on in verse 21. She named the boy Ichabod, and it's got a little letter B there, which points you to the footnote that says that Ichabod means "no glory." She named the boy Ichabod, saying, "The glory has departed from Israel because of the capture of the ark of God and the deaths of her father-in-law and her husband." And she said, "The glory has departed from Israel, for the ark of God has been captured." See, wherever this boy went, it would be a reminder to all who met him that there was no glory in Israel. Isn't that a terrible thing? Israel in the Old Testament were God's people. They should have had glory written all over them. You can read about that in Exodus chapter 40, when this cloud called the Shekinah glory came down and rested upon the tabernacle. And Israel of the Old Testament should have been a people for God's glory. Wherever they went, people should have known the glory of God is present in Israel. But Ichabod says, the very name, there's no glory in Israel. I wonder if that could be said for some churches today and some Christians today as well. In our series on 1 Peter that we're coming back to in about a month's time, in that series we'll come to a chapter in chapter 4 that speaks about the spirit of glory resting on Christians. But isn't it a terrible thing when Christians feel their lives are not full of glory? It's the same with churches as well. There's a prophecy in the Old Testament in Isaiah chapter 4 that says that the glory will be a covering over the church of Jesus Christ. What a terrible thing then when a church does not have glory. Sadly, for many churches and for many Christians, the glory has departed. Now, you might feel that this is true for yourself this morning, that actually, whatever your name is, you are Ichabod this morning. The things are not quite right in your Christian life. They're not like they used to be. Something's missing, something's absent, something's gone wrong somewhere in your Christian life. Instead of glory, it's all so plain and dull and miserable and lifeless and spiritless. There's no glory. And your life has been taken up with events instead of experiences, with contacts instead of relationships, in meetings instead of worship, and in physical effort rather than spiritual reality. So you may have heard that the Christian life should be the most exciting, adventurous, daring kind of ride that there ever is to have. But for you, the Christian life is like being stuck in the dark between stations on the underground. It's pretty boring, really. And if that's you this morning, maybe, well, actually, you should be asking, how can I get the glory back? Where's it gone? What made it disappear? And how can I get that spiritual reality back? Well, let's consider this under three things this morning. A tragic event, a religious nightmare, and a frequent mistake. Think first of all of the tragic event. This is what happens in 1 Samuel chapter 4. We're going to read through that chapter now, commenting on it as we go, so that we can see why this child had to be called Ichabod. It's a tragic story. It all starts off with the Israelites and the Philistines fighting once again. People say that the Old Testament is really not very nice to read. There's so many wars in it. Well, there are so many wars in it because it's a real-life book. It records the things that happened. Human history, tragically, is the story of wars. And there's a war going on here in chapter 4, verse 1. Now, the Israelites went out to fight against the Philistines. And the Israelites camped at Ebenezer and the Philistines at Aphek. The Philistines deployed their forces to meet Israel. And as the battle spread, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 of them on the battlefield. This is awful. It's actually horrible to read. And I know you didn't come to church on a Sunday morning to read about 4,000 people being killed on a battlefield. But this is what happened. Israel and Philistines, they were like the old enemy. Philistines had always been attacking the Israelites ever since the days of Jacob in the book of Genesis. And the Israelites had responded as well, like for like, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. And a battle is fought, and it's a terrible battle. And there's a real defeat for Israel. 4,000 of them killed on the battlefield. That is gory, and that is awful. So the Israelites retreat. They come back to their camp, and you can picture this council of war taking place, the accusations, the questions, the asking about the failure of tactics. Why did you try that when that way should have been better? Didn't you really understand, or did you underestimate the resources of the Philistines? What's gone on for us to lose 4,000 men? So verse 3, you've got the council of war. When the soldiers returned to camp, the elders of Israel asked, why did the Lord bring defeat on us today before the Philistines? So there's questions going on amongst the officials of the army and the politicians and leaders of Israel. What's happened? How can we reverse this defeat and this loss? What can we do next? Well, they get their heads together, and at the end of verse 3, they come up with a bright idea. They say this at the end of verse 3. Let us bring the Ark of the Lord's Covenant from Shiloh, so that he may go with us and save us from the hand of our enemies. This is the solution to their problem, so they think. Let's bring the Ark of the Lord's Covenant. Now, what is that, the Ark of the Lord's Covenant? Sometimes when you read in the Old Testament the Ark, you immediately think of Noah's Ark. And of course, Noah did have an Ark, and we know the history of that. But this is a different kind of ark. It's an ark that you can read about at your leisure in Exodus chapter 25. Read about it sometime there. This ark was popularized by the Indiana Jones movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. And this ark was a very precious thing, a very special thing. It was really quite small. It was a rectangular box, 4 foot by 2.5 foot by 2.5 foot. It was made of acacia wood, and it was overlaid with gold. Nobody must touch this ark. They wanted to transport it from one place to another. They had to put these poles through the pole loops and carry the ark. Inside the ark were the two tablets of the Ten Commandments, a pot of manna, and Aaron's rod that had budded. And on top of this ark, it had a lid, a very precious lid made of solid gold. And on top of that lid, there was crafted two angels facing each other with their wings outstretched. And above that ark, when it was laid, put in the tabernacle, it was said that God would meet with his people. So the ark was simply a box covered with gold. In a sense, though it was precious, there was nothing ultimately special about the ark. What was special about it was what it symbolized, the very presence of God with Israel. So that if people wanted to meet with God, they would send Moses or Aaron or one of the high priests in to that place that he could intercede for Israel. So the ark was just a box covered in gold, which you might like to have one day, but it's a box covered in gold. But it symbolized the very presence of God. So these Israelites in this council of war in verse 3 think that this ark might be the answer to their need, their problem. See, this ark had accompanied Israel on her journey to the promised land. It went before them. This ark had crossed over the river Jordan to the promised land before the Israelites. And in the defeat of Jericho, when the walls came tumbling down, this ark led the Israelites all around Jericho time after time after time until eventually the walls did come crumbling down. So this ark has a good history about it. So these Israelites think, we've been defeated by the Philistines. What should we do? Ah, we know. Let's get the ark of the Lord at the end of verse 3 here, and he'll go with us and save us from the hand of our enemies, and all will be arrived. All will be okay. So verses 4 and 5, the ark arrives. Verse 4, so the people sent men to Shiloh, and they brought back the ark of the covenant of the Lord Almighty, and who is enthroned between the cherubim, the angels. And Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. This is awesome now. The Ark is coming. Verse 5. When the Ark of the Lord's Covenant came into the camp, all Israel raised such a great shout that the ground shook. This would be a bigger shout than any fans with their team scoring the winning goal in even a European Cup final. The ground shook at the shout. This is a mighty shout. They think we've got the answer now. Now, their shout was heard far away. Verse 6. Hearing the uproar, the Philistines asked, what's all this shouting in the Hebrew camp? They couldn't work it out. They knew that these Israelites had been defeated with 4,000 men left dead. And now they hear this great shout in the Israelite camp 2 miles away in Aphek, and they're thinking, what's gone on? And then they realize what's happened. At the end, halfway through verse 6, when they learned that the ark of the Lord had come into the camp, the Philistines were afraid. A god has come into the camp, they said. Oh, no! Nothing like this has happened before. We're doomed. Who will deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? They are the gods who struck the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. Be strong, Philistines, be men, or we will be subject to the Hebrews as they have been to you. Be men and fight. So the second battle commences. And the second battle is again a defeat for Israel. Verse 10. So the Philistines fought, and the Israelites were defeated, and every man fled to his tent. The slaughter was very great. Israel lost 30,000 foot soldiers. The Ark of God was captured, and Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, died. This doesn't make nice reading, I know, but it's recording a historical event that went on. Again, the defeat for Israel was heavy. It was a terrible defeat. Awful. And terrible things happened that day. And it was one of the worst days in the whole of Israelite history. A report then had to be taken back to where the Israelites were. They'd been defeated on the battlefield. And that report is taken back by a Benjamite who's strong and who can run fast. And he takes this report back, first of all, to the kind of capital of Israel at that time, a place called Shiloh. Verse 12, that same day a Benjamite ran from the battle lines and went to Shiloh. Now that was 25 miles away from where the battle was. But he ran with this report. His clothes were torn, dust covered his head. This was a symbol, you see, of defeat. And when he arrived, there was Eli sitting on his chair by the side of the road, watching, because his heart feared for the ark of God. When the man entered the town and told what had happened, the whole town sent up a cry. Here's the response from Shiloh. The ark of God has been captured. It was a very upset town. This cry went up. The report continues to spread. Israel has been defeated. The priests have been killed. And the ark of God has been captured. And now Eli hears this report in verse 14. Eli heard the outcry. He asked, "What's the meaning of this uproar?" The man hurried over to Eli, who was 98 years old, whose eyes had failed so that he could not see. He told Eli, "I've just come from the battle line. I fled from it to this very day." And Eli asked, "What happened, my son?" The man who brought the news replied, "Israel fled before the Philistines, and the army has suffered heavy losses. Also your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, they're dead. And the ark of God has been captured." When he mentioned the ark of God, Eli fell backward off his chair by the side of the gate. His neck was broken, and he died. For he was an old man, and he was heavy, and he had led Israel for 40 years. Again, another tragedy taking place there in Shiloh. This old man who led Israel dies. When he hears the report about the ark of God being captured, he heard three things that day. He heard that Israel had been defeated. He heard, secondly, that his very sons had been killed in the battle. And he heard, thirdly, that the ark of God had been captured. And it was when he heard about the ark of God that he fell off his chair and died. Third part of the report was Phinehas's wife. She hears it in verse 19. Eli's daughter-in-law, the wife of Phinehas, was pregnant and near the time of delivery. And when she heard the news that the ark of God had been captured and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she went into labor and she gave birth. But she was overcome by her labor pains. As she was dying, the women attending her said, "Don't despair, you've given birth to a son." But she did not respond or pay any attention. And she named the boy Ichabod, saying, "The glory has departed from Israel because of the capture of the ark of God and the deaths of her father-in-law and her husband." And she said, "The glory has departed from Israel, for the ark of God has been captured." This really is a terrible day in Israel's history. The day the ark of God was captured by the Philistines, the day the glory departed, the day of the birth of Ichabod. Now, I know that is not very nice reading. So why read it then on a Sunday morning, which has got sunshine outside? We read it for a really important reason. We read it because what we see here is a religious nightmare. Israel made the nightmare mistake of letting their relationship with God become a matter of outward religion and ritual rather than a close walk with him in their hearts. See, this ark of God being captured was but a symbol of what already happened in the hearts of the Israelites. In his covenant, God had said to Israel in the Old Testament that if you stick with me and if you worship me and if your hearts belong to me, then wherever you go, I will give you prosperity, success, and victory. But if you turn away from me, you will be defeated. So with their defeat and with the ark of God being captured, it had shown the sad history of Israel. They turned away from God and they'd left him. So when the ark of God was gone, it demonstrated that God had withdrawn his presence from them. Their life should have been lived in a relationship with the Lord, a close walk with God. But instead, their hearts had left the Lord, and they were merely trusting in outward forms of religion. See, where do they look for the answer to their defeat? They don't look at their own hearts. They don't look inwardly. They don't think, what's our relationship with God like? Rather, they think of the articles of religion. We must get the Ark of the Covenant. And they think that this Ark, well, they use it as no more than a good luck charm, a kind of a magic wand to wave. They make the tragic mistake of looking on the outward symbols of religion and not on their own hearts or their own lives and their relationship with God. What was their real problem? Their heart was hard. Their relationship with God was broken. Their inner life was barren. Their faithfulness and holiness had been compromised. Their devotion and commitment to God was half-hearted or non-existent. And they think that a mere box of wood covered in gold would do the trick. Let's turn to religion. Let's turn to outward things. And that will help us in our great need of life. But it doesn't. It simply shows how far they'd gone from God. Instead of looking to the inner reality of the Spirit, they look to the outward religion of a box. And when that happens, Ichabod is born. The glory departs. Do you know, our final point here is this. This is a frequent mistake people make. And we make it today. Though we live about 3,000 years from this incident in 1 Samuel chapter 4, yet we still make the same mistake today. We turn to religion instead of to the true God. We look at outward things instead of our hearts and our relationship to Him. We turn to religion. And religion is a nightmare dressed like a daydream. It's a frequent mistake people make. Religion outwardly can look really good. I mean, there's a lot that you can appeal to when you look outwardly to religion. I mean, that Ark of the Covenant, that must have looked so nice, mustn't it? This golden box, these cherubim, the wings outstretched. People would have looked at that and they would have said, whoa, that really is spectacular. People would have come from miles around. You know, the queues outside the Tower of London to get in to see the crown jewels? Takes you ages to get in to see them because people come from miles to see something spectacular. So that box, that Ark of the Covenant, it would have drawn crowds if they were allowed to see it. Certainly when it was taken out to the battlefield, everybody would have been agog with looking at it. It looked really something. But it was nothing without God. It's the same with Christianity. Christianity can be spectacular at times with its buildings and cathedrals and its churches, its ornaments, its gold, its silver, its wood, its altars, its relics, its big pulpits. It can look really spectacular, and people go for miles to visit different kinds of religious buildings, thinking that God might be there. Or people can look at rotas and rituals, and we can be so busy doing some really good things, and people can admire you. Wow, you're giving up your time to do that? You must be a really good person. And so much of it is outward, just religious. And it might be like a nice daydream to look at. But inwardly, your heart is a nightmare. There's stuff going on in there that you want sorted out, and religion cannot do it for you. You can be spiritually barren. You can be filled with bitterness or envy or pride. And there's no inner reality with God. There's no spiritual flame going on. It's all work. It's all just outward. It's all moral. It's all active. And there's no enjoyment. And you might look really good in your outward appearance of Sunday best and religion. But inwardly, you're dead. And it's a mess. You feel that's true about you this morning? What then do you do about it? Are you Ichabod? And you don't want to be? You want the glory to come back to your Christian life? What do you do about it? First, make sure you're a Christian. Don't just assume because you're in a church building on a Sunday morning that makes you a Christian. It doesn't. Are you trusting in religion or in reality? It's not enough just to do outward things. It's not enough just to come along to church. Have you set apart the Lord Jesus as Lord in your heart? That's what makes you a Christian. When you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you've surrendered your life to him, and you've given him your all. That's what a Christian is. Make sure, first and foremost, you're a Christian, true follower of Jesus. But suppose you say, well, yes, I am a Christian, but it has still gone horribly wrong, and I don't know what to do to get back that wonderful sense of glory in my life. Then the final reference is chapter 7, 1 Samuel chapter 7. This is what the Israelites should have done in the first place, and this is what we need to do as well. 1 Samuel chapter 7 from verse 2. The ark remained at Kiriath-Jearim a long time, 20 years in all. Then all the people of Israel turned back to the Lord. And so Samuel said to all the Israelites, if you are returning to the Lord with all your hearts, then rid yourselves of the foreign gods and the Ashtaroths and commit yourselves to the Lord and serve him only. And he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. You see the three things they were to do there in that verse? One, turn back to the Lord with all your heart. Is your relationship with him broken? Is it half-hearted? Is it simply, Sunday, I'll be a Christian today. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, not even be bothered with the Lord. Is your back towards him rather than your face? Ask yourself this question. How far have I wandered away from God? And when am I going to turn back towards him? Let him see your face and realize the beauty of the Lord. So turn back to God. What's more, secondly, if this is you this morning, you're a Christian, but your life seems to be dull and gloryless, then the second thing we're told to do here in verse 3 is to rid yourself of false gods. It's amazing how many things take the place of God in our lives. It can be a person, a thing, an event, a possession, a passion. It just takes over. We need to put it in its proper place. One man once said, an idol is usually a good thing that we have made an ultimate thing. Ask yourself this question. If I were to make a list of important things in my life, what number would God be? A third and final thing to do here in this verse, verse 3. Commit yourselves to the Lord and serve him only. What are you committed to? You're committed to something. Are you just committed to church? Just committed to leading a good life? Religion? Duty? We need to be 100% sold out to God. Fully his. It says, commit yourselves to the Lord and serve him. And you will find that the glory will come back. Turn back to him. Put the other things in your life in their proper place. Commit yourself wholly to God, and you will no longer be Ichabod. 1,000 years after Ichabod was born, there was another baby born in Bethlehem, and his name was Jesus. And in Jesus we see grace and truth. And we see his glory, and we see what Jesus did as the glorious one. And once we turn back to the Lord Jesus Christ, or come to him for the first time, and then once we keep turning back to him, we realize that the glory is there. And it's the glory of the cross, the glory of one who loved us so much that he suffered and died to take away our sin and misery, and he can give us life. Not just now, but for a glorious eternity. A life full of Jesus is glory, glory, hallelujah. Amen.